This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bloomberg reporting. European Union sanctions that ban almost all seaborne imports of Russian crude come into effect December 5th. The law also prohibits the provision of insurance and other services to tankers carrying that crude anywhere in the world. A revision to the existing plan to be adopted if Group of Seven countries accept the U.S. price cap proposal would make it illegal for EU ships to carry Russian crude if the cargo is purchased higher than a still-to-be-determined level. It would also extend the insurance and service bans to all future shipments on non-European vessels under the same conditions. I welcome Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution, who's been warning that this date approaches for weeks now. And the date is realistic. We do not have a price cap yet, somewhere in the $60 range. But in any event, this is the blow to the Russian economy, long expected. Michael, a very good evening to you. The price cap right now has been negotiated in somewhere in the $60 range. Is that adequate to the challenge? I'm told that this will cost Russia 2 million barrels per day of income. Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening to you. This is a global reach because the language of these documents issued by the British Exchequer and then by the G7 and by the United States Treasury is saying that it applies globally even to trade between the third countries. So if someone buys this oil and resells it to some other country, which are neither Europe nor Russia nor the United States, still it applies because otherwise they will be denied insurance, they will be denied financial services, financial transactions, payments will not go through. So it's very, very comprehensive. It's a leaked bucket. Still, there will be a lot of cheating, but generally the coverage is universal. And most importantly, we remember that 90% of insurance services for seaborne oil, for oil shipments, are provided by the Great British, Lloyd of London, and other major British companies and the European companies, 90% of insurance. So this will bite.
A twist here. Watch this. Winter coming on. Russia may have access to a growing so-called shadow fleet of tankers owned by opaque companies based in jurisdictions that don't share the condemnation of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But Russia lacks modern ice-breaking vessels needed to lift crude from the Baltic Sea, which accounts for nearly half of Moscow's shipments. So this is a general winter is also weighing in here, not just in Ukraine, but in the Baltic Sea basin. So, Michael, you, to your measure, because you guided me to understand, has Russia found a workaround here, or is this an ultimate challenge to their ability to pay for themselves?
No, it is physically impossible. Physically impossible. The Baltic Sea is a very shallow sea. So they have to put it on tankers, which have a very some kind of superficial hull, and then they move them to some other port where the oil is reloaded, and it is stuck there because it cannot be financed, it cannot be insured. And another thing is that there are secondary sanctions. And so all this OPEC and other so-called shadow fleet, these are either state companies or private companies, but they do not want to fall under the secondary sanctions. So we are talking about 2.4 million barrels a day of oil to Europe. It's crude oil. And another 1.3 million barrels a day of petroleum products, such as diesel, to Europe. 3.7 million barrels a day. The Russians cannot substitute. There is no market in the world that can absorb this kind of oil. So they will lose, even if under the best possible conditions, by experts' predictions, they will lose from 1 to 2 million barrels a day of oil revenues from 1 to 2 million barrels a day, which is close to 15 to 20% of their global oil exports.
The Russian economy. Watching here is Professor Konstantin Sonin at the University of Chicago's Graduate School of Public Policy. He's writing at Foreign Affairs. There's three things that are happening to the Russian economy now. Everybody's keeping their eye on the ruble or the boasting about how they're finding substitutes for McDonald's outlets in Russia. However, he underlines, one, imports. Michael's talked about that, especially semiconductors. The high tech that is necessary for modern manufacturing culture is missing and not coming back. A second, cronies are being created. And Michael, that's fresh to me. I hadn't thought it through. But what we have here is the state taking over private enterprise and putting in the hands of men, chiefly men, dominantly men, who are friends or have relationships with the dictator. That would be Vladimir Putin, the elected president. And that begins to resemble what the Soviet Union looked like. Michael, when we were in the 20th century, it was in the hands of a few men, who apparatchiks, who had direct relations to the presidium, and there was no growth whatsoever. Is that inevitable in your measure? Is Russia headed back to the Soviet days?
There is a lot of centralization now for military purposes and for enforcement of production. At the same time, there are all sorts of private schemes, correctly, where the private entrepreneurs, clever people, are trying to outsmart the government. One of the recent large grand schemes is that developers themselves, construction developers, now provide more than half of mortgage loans. And they borrow from the banks at very low rate, and the banks borrow from the central bank, and the central bank prints money. And they sell, the developers sell more expensively their apartments, what they build, so the customers, the consumers do not benefit, and the developers pocket what the central bank actually is subsidizing the entire scheme. So this is a situation in which the government is trying to centralize the economy to impose some kind of quasi-central planning, and at the same time, clever entrepreneurs know how to game the system.
And gaming the system, the professor Sonin goes on to say that once you create cronies, you create the necessity of decentralized cronies. He says the one thing worse than the corruption of the regime is decentralized corruption. In other words, we'll have gangs and bodyguards surrounding apparatchiks who are dominating in tin or in nickel, or the mining men who have been part of the culture. What grieves me, Michael, you know I speak to Russia routinely, young correspondents who are doing their best to avoid the censorship that's being imposed on them. But in any event, these are young people who have no memory of the Soviet Union, none whatsoever. You and I do. We both understand it was a strangled culture. So again, you say there are entrepreneurs finding a way out. Is it enough, Michael, for the country to rejuvenate itself on the other side of a ceasefire?
No, because the gaming the system means stealing. It means that instead of producing goods and services for the consumers, people are just lining their pockets at the expense of consumers and at the expense of the government. And since the government doesn't produce anything, it is at the expense of the taxpayers. So this is a system which exists in many Latin American countries and many poor countries, the third world countries. So this is a movement from a very kind of middle-level, semi-advanced, modern country, down the hall to the worst examples of the poorest countries in the world. It takes time, but that's what that's where they are, downhill on the slippery slope.
Michael Bernstein of the Hoover Institution. Is Russia's future Cuba? I'm John Bachelet.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.